Hello and welcome to the Field Talk podcast from the Linder Farm Network. I'm your host, Dan Lemke. The demand for biodiesel and renewable diesel is growing thanks in large part to low carbon fuel standards and the drive to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. However, there may be a more compelling reason for increased use of those biofuels. Floyd Vergara is Director of State Government Affairs for Clean Fuels Alliance America. He joins us on this episode to detail results of human health studies that are truly eye-opening.
I've been with Clean Fuels Alliance America for past 3.5 years now. I serve as the Director of State Governmental Affairs, so I oversee the State Government Affairs Program in all 50 states, and I oversee two directors of regulatory affairs, one of which is focused on the Midwest, the other one focused on the Northeast region. I'm located in Sacramento, California, so I'm focused on the West Coast, which is, as some folks might know, is ground zero for climate change programs in the U.S. So it's very important for clean fuels to have a strong presence here on the West Coast.
And now, obviously, you two have a background kind of on the regulatory side, so you definitely know of what you speak when it comes to addressing climate and fuel-related issues.
Yeah, that's right. Prior to joining Clean Fuels, I served 32 years with the California Air Resources Board, where I led a number of programs, one of which is the Low Carbon Fuel Standard, which has really sent strong market signals to drive biodiesel and renewable diesel volumes up in that state, as well as in Oregon, which has a very similar program. And then Washington State recently adopted theirs. That went into effect this January, and we're expecting great results from that as well.
Now, obviously, we're hearing a lot about the carbon and the climate-related type of activity. Is that driving a lot of activity in other states, hence the reason that you have folks in the organization that are focused on some of those state initiatives?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I don't want your readers to think that we're only focused on carbon programs. Especially in the Midwest, there are a number of biodiesel and renewable diesel related programs that are geared more towards economic development, jobs, economic activities and things like that. And those are very beneficial for the biodiesel and renewable diesel industry as well. So we're focused on that. And in the Northeast, they're also looking at carbon programs, but they are very focused as well on improving the carbon and air quality performance of the petroleum heating oil that's used to heat over 1 million homes in the region. And so our fuels, especially biodiesel, is playing a very prominent role in those discussions in terms of reducing the carbon emissions as well as improving air quality in that region.
Certainly folks here in Minnesota well acquainted with the biodiesel and having been, part of the leading edge, I guess, getting some of those biodiesel standards and utilization through state government and that sort of thing. But we're talking a lot today, or what I'd like to talk about, Floyd, is you have a study looking at something totally outside, I guess, of the economics type of things and more looking at the human impact. So you have a Trinity study that was undertaken that I'd like to have you tell us a little more about that. First of all, kind of what's the overview of what that study was looking at?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So the Trinity study, and we call it the Trinity study because we commissioned Trinity Consultants, which is a world-renowned consulting firm, multinational offices all over the globe, with expertise, four decades worth of expertise in complex air dispersion modeling and health risk assessments using the same tools that US EPA and other regulatory agencies use. So what we did was, the scientific literature has ample evidence of the ability of biodiesel and renewable diesel to reduce not only greenhouse gas emissions on average 74% and can be even greater than that, but also have associated with that significant reductions in those air pollutants that adversely affect the public's health, and specifically particulate matter emissions, which biodiesel has the ability to reduce 50 to 80%, depending on the engine it's used and things like that. So we knew the science supported a the science showed that these fuels reduce emissions by a lot, but we wanted to take that to the next level, which is really taking those emission reductions and quantifying them into health outcomes that are relatable to the average ordinary citizen. And what I mean by health outcomes are things like cancer burden reduced, premature deaths reduced from exposure to diesel particulate matter, asthma cases reduced or avoided, work loss days reduced, things like that. And then quantifying all of those outcomes, improved outcomes, using EPA's standard valuation protocol to convert those into dollar values so that we can take to the discussions with the states much more information in terms of what do these programs that drive, that hopefully drive volumes of biodiesel and renewable diesel, what do they actually accomplish on the ground? So we commissioned Trinity Consultants to take a look at high diesel use sites across the country. And those are sites like ports, rail yards, logistics and distribution facilities, freight corridors, agricultural operations, and then in the Northeast, high density housing that uses a lot of residential heating oil. And we commissioned Trinity to take a look at really just a simple question. If you took the petroleum diesel or distillate in that high diesel use site and switched that over to 100% biodiesel, what would that look like on the ground? What would the result be? And how would that impact the folks living near these communities that are being exposed to the particulate matter emissions and other compounds? And so we worked with Trinity Consultants, selected 28 different sites across the country, both coasts as well as the Midwest, Washington, D.C., and the Southwest. Mid-Atlantic as well, and we wanted to take a look at the states that are aggressively pursuing carbon reductions, but also those cities and areas that the American Lung Association has identified as some of the worst places to live in, as far as exposure to a variety of different pollutants, in this case, particulate matter of the very smallest sizes, the PM2.5. And so we wanted to capture, 28 different sites. We started, and those sites being among the sort of sites that I mentioned earlier, ports, rail yards, and so forth. And again, we wanted to focus on transportation sources, which tend to be the largest sources for most jurisdictions of greenhouse gases as well as air pollutants, and also residential heating oil uses. And so we commissioned Trinity Consultants. They used the US EPA standard protocols for calculating, modeling through computer models, how the air pollutants are dispersed at the ground level. And this is one of the things that really distinguishes this study from previous studies, is we wanted to do like a ground up analysis. Meaning, rather than looking at the broad region and trying to figure out what the average person is being exposed to, we started from the ground, looking at what are the what is the data that EPA and other jurisdictions have from these sources at the ground level, and then using the computer, the computerized air dispersion modeling, seeing how those pollutants are distributed to the nearby neighborhoods, and then coupling that with health risk assessments, what do those pollutants do to the person, and then how would that situation change if you then switched over to B100? And so the results were, to say the least, very eye-opening. We knew that these fuels, these petroleum diesel replacements, achieve significant reductions in diesel PM, particulate matter, But we didn't, we never had the tools, the right tools to be able to quantify that into metrics that are, you know, an average person can actually relate to.
So what are some of the key outcomes, I guess, Floyd, that would have impact on people to make them sit up and take notice?
From a national standpoint, for just the 28 sites that we studied, and again, this is just the tip of the iceberg since there are literally dozens of similar sites across the country. So for just those 28 sites, the cancer cases over a 70-year time frame would be reduced if you switched over to B100, would be reduced by nearly 9,500 cancer cases. Premature deaths would be reduced by nearly 930 premature deaths per year, over 456,000 asthma cases per year would be reduced, over 142,000 sick days per year would be reduced, and nearly 829,000 what's called minor restricted activity days per year. So these would be the days when you had planned to do some gardening or take a walk around the block, but because the air pollution is so bad, it's actually changed your behavior so that you're no longer planning to do that. And all of those plus other sort of health outcomes that the modeling had put out, all of those altogether would total over $7.5 billion per year in avoided health costs. And so it's a staggering and, like I said, eye-opening result. These results are informative of what's happening on the ground at the neighborhood level, again, differentiating from previous studies. And these are things that you could do today, you know, because biodiesel and renewable diesel are drop-in fuels. As you know, as your listeners know, a lot of different states are talking about electrification, which we believe is an important part of, you know, any sort of solid decarbonization strategies. But all of the literature shows that deep penetration of electrification technologies, especially in the hard to electrify sectors like heavy duty on and off road, marine, rail, aviation, and heating, residential heating, those are going to take many years, if not decades. And so it's important for your listeners and for us when we have conversations with folks and stakeholders that they understand what can be accomplished with simple drop-in fuels and strategies using those fuels like biodiesel and renewable diesel, what they can accomplish in the many years it'll take while these jurisdictions are pursuing electrification.
So how was this information being utilized, and how, what kind of response are you getting from folks when you kind of lay this out in front of them? And the, as you said, the outcomes are pretty staggering and certainly make folks sit up and take notice.
I've been working in the regulatory field for three decades. I can tell you that it has had a very big impact in terms of the discussions and the information sharing with stakeholders. Most of them, if not all of them, have really had no idea the sort of impacts to actual relatable public health outcomes that we're talking about, that the study shows. And that's the problem with, you know, talking about the benefits in terms of percent reduction of PM or other sort of pollutants. That's really sort of an abstract, difficult to wrap your head around. I mean, yeah, 50% sounds like a lot, but what does it mean to you and I, or a mother with some children who are suffering from asthma? It doesn't really help her in her day-to-day decision making. But this sort of information has really kept fuels, drop-in fuels like biodiesel and renewable diesel at the forefront of conversations as states are looking at how do they reduce their carbon emissions and address climate change while still getting, you know, as much benefit from cleaning up the air as possible. This has been a very important part of the conversation in Washington State, in New York, as they're going through their climate strategy developments, in other states, and even in those states where you know, carbon reduction is not necessarily at the forefront. If you're talking about states that are looking to develop their economy and they want to bring in biodiesel incentives and things like that, it really helps them to understand the other sort of benefits besides economic benefits that, you know, are these fuels provide. And they can provide them since they're drop-in. They can provide them immediately.
Now, will this also be something that you're doing, you know, additional work on, maybe looking at some other sites, or how is that, what is the status there?
Yeah, great question. So to date, we started this study in 2020, undertook a second phase in 2021, completed that last year. And so, you know, that covers the 28 different sites that I talked about before. We are looking, we are currently expanding the study to what we call Trinity 3.0, the third generation of Trinity. And in this case, we are looking specifically at ports, rail yards, and airports to quantify the benefits of not just biodiesel and renewable diesel for marine and rail applications, but at the airports, we're trying to quantify, do the same sort of quantification for the substitution of sustainable aviation fuel, which is another fuel that our industry represents, in place of conventional jet fuel made from fossil feedstocks. So that's coming up. We hope to complete that this year, early this year. And we have added additional sites to the second generation. We've added Lincoln and Omaha, Nebraska, as well as Albuquerque, New Mexico. So very similar results to what I just talked about, but really excited about the ports and airports in the Trinity 3.0 study. You know, we're really looking forward to what that study says. And, you know, of course, we are hoping it says the same thing, but of course, we'll see what the science says.
Is there a place then if folks want to learn a little bit more about this? Obviously, in any podcast, we can only touch on it in such detail, but is there a place folks can go to learn more about some of these results?
Yeah, on our homepage, cleanfuels.org, you will see a link to resources. And in that, the first, you know, bullet or link under that tab of resources is the health benefit study. And that's a complete compilation of both the Trinity 1.0 and the Trinity 2.0 studies. So your listeners and your audience is more than welcome to go visit cleanfuels.org and click on the resources tab and look up the health benefit study. I think they'll find it very informative. There are a number of one-page infographics as well included in that page that I would encourage your audience to take a look at. They really summarize and encapsulate all of the important findings from this study. And then, of course, once the third phase of the study is completed, we will post those results on our website, on the same website. So I want to point out, this is my gift to you. As one of the 28 sites, we actually did an analysis of Minneapolis-St. Paul as one location. And just to give your audience a flavor for what those results were, we are modeling estimated 19 premature deaths could be avoided or reduced by that switch to B100, and that would total in terms of value about $149 million per year. So this is 19 avoided premature deaths per year, 7,900 fewer asthma attacks per year, 614,000 per year in avoided lost work days, so that would be a little bit over 3,000 fewer work days per year that would be saved from the switch. Altogether, for Minneapolis and St. Paul, all of those benefits would total about $156 million per year. And so the point here is there really is no region or city that is exempt from the sort of impacts whenever you have a site that uses a high amount, a high volume of petroleum diesel, you're going to get these sort of impacts. And so even Minneapolis, could benefit from this. St. Louis in Missouri has a very similar, a little bit higher, $212 million per year in terms of avoided health costs from similar sort of results. And even in our nation's capital and in US EPA administrators' home state of, Charlotte, North Carolina, we found very similar results. So I would invite you and your audience to take a look at our website, see what those say about if you live in any of these cities, take a look at what that says. The other important thing about this study is that it provides a framework for doing similar sort of analysis for other cities and other sites that are not, are not one of the 28. So if there's a port or there's a freight distribution or a high traffic freight corridor that's not one of our sites, you can certainly use this sort of framework to take a look at that, see if that qualifies for a deeper dive, and then use the actual modeling protocol to do that deeper dive and quantify the benefits.
Thanks for joining us for this Field Talk podcast. Find other podcasts at linderfarmnetwork.com and get updated market information, analysis, and farm news on your local LFN affiliate.